Hey, y'all. Thanks for joining us for another impromptu podcast of what I'm going to call like three wannabe athletes and one real athlete or something like that. We've got Mark Medici, our publisher, Carrie Kleck, editorial writer and columnist. I'm Josh Bredesky, editorial page editor. And our guest today is Jenny Carnes, president and CEO of San Antonio Sports. Also, college basketball All-American, right? Yeah, 1,299 points at UIW.
You're gonna make me blush.
Yeah, yeah. So we're just here to talk basketball. So it's Final
Four. My favorite
season.
Topic.
Yeah, my favorite topic too.
But wait a second, before we jump into basketball, like you were a tennis player as well, right?
Yes,
I played tennis as well
at UIW, right? Mm-hmm. So both sports.
Yep.
All 4 years?
I played 2.5 of tennis. It was a lot to juggle, but I got lucky to play tennis. I wasn't recruited to play. I was there on a basketball scholarship, and my freshman year.
You just were that good at tennis.
No. It's a better story. One of my sweet mates was on the tennis team. How our coach let her go snow skiing that year, but she blew out her knee
snow
skiing, and we didn't carry an alternate that year. So she said, you need to go talk to Coach Newman. On the tennis team. Go talk to Coach Newman and see if he'll let you try out. And I walked on the team that afternoon.
That's wild.
Two years, 14-5 singles record. Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Went to the national tournament twice.
Not bad. Yeah. Not bad. And that's your second sport, right? So also, since we're bragging on you, you were magna cum laude, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, incredible. 1,299 points, 15.7 points per game your junior year, 14.3 your senior year, right? So, at any rate, I think, you know, four of us dreamed of playing college basketball.
Or three of us did. One did. Right.
Yeah. No, thanks for joining us. We're just here to talk college basketball. So, it's the NCAA tournament. Who are you picking for the Final Four, men's and women's?
Well, first of all, it's the most wonderful time of year, is it not?
It is.
Got my March Madness shirt on. I love March. And I went through my bracket this morning. It's a tough one. I think it's going to be an interesting tournament. I think we could see an even more interesting tournament than last year, which would be hard to top. So I have Houston winning it all on the men's side. And I'm going to go bold. And I've got Iowa winning it all on the women's side. And I know that would be a big upset against South Carolina. And we'll see if Iowa can even get past LSU. That side of the draw, I think, is going to be very compelling.
The Lady Gamecocks are...
They're unbelievable.
Pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
Pretty unbelievable. Well, actually, I think women's basketball this year with Caitlin Clark leading it has been just incredible. I think the rise of women's basketball over the course of really the last kind of 15 years is meteoric. I mean, I know we're going to talk a lot about the Final Four in San Antonio next year in the men's bracket. Just like, how proud are you to be kind of an ambassador of women's basketball, you know, and what are your thoughts just on what you're seeing from these incredible athletes?
I love that question because being a kid that grew up playing basketball, you could only watch the national championship game on the women's side. That was the only game that was televised, and it was on network TV. And I remember watching Cheryl Swoops win it for Texas Tech. And so that was kind of the beginning of, like, this is a huge thing, and then watching the birth of the WNBA. And then getting into my job at San Antonio Sports, hosting our first women's Final Four here in 2002. That was my first project to work on. So we went to the 2001 Final Four in St. Louis, and Notre Dame won that year with Ruth Riley leading the charge. But there was also a young woman named Jackie Stiles from Southwest Missouri State. I think that was the name of the school, right? Who was breaking all kinds of scoring records just at an unheard of pace. And then you fast forward to watching what Sabrina did and Kelsey Plum. And then you thought, you never see Kelsey Plum's record get broken. It got shattered this year with Caitlin Clark. So watching that evolution of women's basketball, women's sports alone, it's been fun.
Yeah.
When you look at all the opportunities that exist now in women's basketball and women's sports, but specifically basketball, like, and the attention on it, you know, I guess I'm wondering, like, when you look back at your own career and coming up, do you wish that had existed? You know, that there were, I mean, how many avenues were closed because of
Yeah,
sexism.
I think back to my 4 years of playing at Incarnate Word, and we took back seat to not only the men's team, but at the time the Spurs were practicing in our facility. So we were low women on the totem pole when it came to practice time, when it came to where we ate after games, how we traveled to games, and just watching the evolution of how far women's sports have come. It's been nice to kind of have a front row seat to that. And especially having daughters now, as a parent, knowing that they've got greater opportunities and that they don't see the disparity that I grew up with. And I can go back to my childhood and give you even worse stories about how playing junior high and high school athletics compared to the boys. And my brother was in high school at the same time. And, you know, what he was getting, how he was treated was much different than how little sister was treated.
Start there. I mean, go back to Uvalde and your interest in sports, your evolution. I mean, just going from athlete to eventually sports management. But how does it start as a girl in Uvalde?
Yeah, I played every sport growing up. Started shooting hoops with my dad and my brother on the driveway, and at a very early age, started playing tennis, probably at age 4. But baseball was actually one of my first sports. My dad was the head.
So not softball, baseball.
Because we didn't have softball. You didn't
have softball, right.
We didn't have a softball program at the time in Uvalde. And so if I wanted to play anything similar to that, it was with all boys, and it was baseball. My dad was the head umpire in the Uvalde Little League for a number of years. So I spent every night at the Little League fields complex. And I was the only girl on my baseball team for I can't tell you how many years. My brother was on that team.
Could you rake?
It wasn't bad. Let me tell you, my brother was playing first base. I was catching at the time, and they moved me to first base. We still tease each other about this. So they moved him over to third, and he has his own excuse for why that happened. But I'll never forget this story, and I hope this is okay to share. But the last year I played baseball, and I decided to hang up my cleats was because one of the boys on my team, who I had a little crush on at the time, in the dugout one day, he asked me if I wore a cup. I said, all right, it's probably time to head on over to the girls' side and start playing basketball and tennis. And that was the end of my baseball career.
What year was that?
I did like 1991 or something, 89. I don't remember. But my dad, being so close to the league, he was just always on me, especially when I was catching. You need to keep your hair short, no earrings, no ponytail. You got to be able to rip your mask off as fast as you can when there's a pot fly. And so those are the kinds of things we talk about at the dinner table.
Yeah. Even at that age, did you feel pressure?
Like, oh, yeah. 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 But in a good way. My dad was a college athlete. My parents always just, they wanted me to do my best, and they gave me the opportunities. You know, we talked about barriers to sport earlier. And fortunately, I didn't have that many just in terms of opportunities. But looking at the difference between boys and girls, I went to every basketball camp that was put on by our boys varsity basketball coach for years and years, and I'd be one of the only girls.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything different. That's how I grew up.
What else did you play as a kid? So baseball, basketball, tennis, what else did you?
Volleyball, grew up skiing, but volleyball, tennis, basketball in high school.
What did you love the most? Basketball?
Probably a tie between basketball and tennis.
All right.
Yeah. Tennis was my first love, but I was better at basketball.
I guess I asked the question of all the sports you played. I think we all did that as well.
I miss golf. Sorry. Yeah.
Golf too?
A lot of people like miss golf.
Yeah.
Sorry, golfers.
Do you worry about with your kids today, right? I have a 21-year-old and a 15-year-old, and Blake is a dynamic tennis player, but he also plays about 17 hours a week, and he basically can't play any other sport.
Yeah.
Do you worry about the concentration of youth sports and how these kids like are not participating across multiple sport disciplines?
I do. And I think that's still one of the benefits of being from a small town is you don't see that as much of the concentration. But unfortunately, that's just the pressure that youth sports is putting on our kids and the parents these days. And I feel like it's coming more from the parents that, you know, you need to practice so many hours a week and let's just focus on one sport. And there was a time when I thought, gosh, if I would have just played tennis, how much further could I have gone if I would have just played basketball? But I look back on that time now and I wouldn't change anything. I never had knee problems. You know, you hear about, especially on the girls' side, that these kids that are just playing one sport, they are more likely to have a knee injury or an ACL tear because of that, because they're not using all of their muscles in different ways. So I wouldn't change anything about playing year round in multiple practices in a day.
I worry about it from a different perspective. Like, Blake loves tennis, so he's the one driving the bus. But what he has become obsessed with is that if he can't be excellent at something, he doesn't want to do it. You know, so like in high school, I'd really like him to play football because I think the experience is incredible to be on a team like that. But he's like, yeah, but I don't think I'll be that good. And it's like, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
Like it's okay not to be your best at any of that. So it's nice to hear from you about how you experienced all of this. I mean, look at all the things you can do.
Well, and I'll give you another example of that. I have buddies who have kids that have graduated from high school that are now in college that played club volleyball, like from sixth grade all through their senior year, and they get to their senior and they're so burned out because they've played both school and club year round that they get offers to play in college and they're done. So you've invested thousands of dollars. And I don't see that as a waste of money at all, because that's a part of our mission at San Antonio Sports is just keeping kids active and healthy and learning the life lessons that you garner from sports. But to get to that point and to be that good and that competitive and to walk away because you're burned out.
How do you approach it with your own kids? You have two daughters, right?
Two daughters, seventh grader and a second grader. So we're just kind of at the beginning of all of this. My oldest is in club volleyball for the first time this year, and my little one's playing basketball. Surprisingly, I do not put a lot of pressure on my kids. Just having grown up with a little bit different environment in my household, if they want to play, as long as they play something. And if we're going to commit to it, we're going to commit and we're going to finish the season. We're going to be at every practice on time and we're going to practice at home. But I just do not put a ton of pressure on them. I want them to play. I want them to participate. I want them to be on a team. But come on, the reality is most kids aren't going on to college. They're not going on to the next level. I just want them to take away the benefits that sports can provide.
How did you make it to Incarnate Word?
This is a good story. So my senior year, we were tied for first in our district with Pleasanton. Came down to senior night in Uvalde. We were tied for tied going into like 5 seconds left on the clock, maybe less. It had to have been less. No, I'm going to take this back. Gosh, it's been a long time ago. We were down by one, probably less than 5 seconds left. We had the length of the court to go. Throw it in. I sent a shot 3/4 of the way down the court. Goes off the back of the iron. We lose the game in front of a packed gym on senior night. I was devastated, right? So we were now tied for second with Floresville, and we had to go into a playoff game to determine who went into the playoffs, because this was back when only the top two teams went from district. Now four teams go, which is, I think, a little ridiculous. But we ended up playing that playoff game against Floresville at Incarnate Word in the Convo. And I had already been sending tapes out, VHS tapes, in FedEx envelopes out all over the state. Even sent one to Jody Conrad. That's who I really wanted to play for. Mm. And Sally Walling, the coach at the time, she never even returned a phone call until she saw me play on her court that night. We lost in double overtime that night, but I had a heck of a game. She came right up to me afterward, introduced herself to my parents, had me over for a tryout the next weekend, and offered me a scholarship.
So it's like a good thing you missed that 3/4 shot.
I tell that story all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. How many offers did you get for college? You know,
not that many. I had a couple of D3 offers. St. Mary's offered me a scholarship, but not that many for someone who was second in the state in scoring. I averaged 24 points my senior year and nobody cared.
So yeah, what was that like then?
Wow.
Like you're sending out VHS tapes and no one's responding. You're averaging 24 points a game.
Wow.
And you said no one cares.
9.
So
it's amazing what's like burned into your memory. Right.
Yeah. So 24.9 points per game, VHS tapes all over the state. Coaches aren't, what is that like?
I think it was just being from a small town that didn't get a lot of looks. We didn't play, we were in not a very competitive district that year. And we still, you know, our record wasn't that great. We were vying for the district title, but our overall, oh my gosh, record was not that great. And so we just wouldn't have a lot of scouts come and watch us. And I was the only person on the team that was decent. And it was what it was. So I took my opportunity and ran with it.
Who were your favorite athletes?
Growing up?
Yeah.
Michael Jordan.
Does that settle the question already?
Yeah.
Does that quick detour. Yeah. LeBron or Michael?
Oh, Michael.
Okay.
No, I know. I'll always Carrie's going to retire from the podcast. Carrie's going to retire.
Are you a LeBron fan? I'm a Michael fan too, but you know, it's a good debate. You
know? No, I grew up watching every Chicago game that was on TV. Of course, huge Spurs fan from day one. But outside of Michael Jordan, I was a big Andre Agassi fan, big Navratilova fan, Jennifer Capriati. David Robinson, of course, and as we got into the generation of the Spurs that we all missed. But yeah, I was Michael Jordan all the way.
All right.
Michael Irvin, I was a big Cowboys fan too. Love Michael Irvin.
It's awesome.
Emmitt Smith. Billy Bates. I mean, I could keep going.
Yeah. Keep going. Yeah.
So we're 382 days away from Final Four in San Antonio. Is that about right?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing, right?
It is.
This is arguably the best time of year. I was saying to Josh yesterday that I think the Saturday of the Final Four is my favorite sports day of the year.
Better than Thursday week.
That's what it's called. Thursday.
I actually like the first round.
First round for me.
I think the Final Four to me is the most compelling day of basketball in college because I Thursday and Friday are super fun, right? And you have all the brackets and you have all of the social camaraderie that's happening. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think March Madness is the greatest spectacle on sports on television. So for me, it's that.
Interesting.
It's the day of the Final Four.
Just the build up all day and the energy and
the games are typically epic.
I find that the tournament, I agree. The games are incredible, and there's like obviously the Final Four is usually more exciting than the championship game. Usually, not always, but I think the tournament actually gets less interesting as it because eventually the upsets stop, and you know talent wins out, right?
I tend to agree.
Yeah, like so.
I mean, with how many times Arizona has lost in the first round, it's surprising to me that you would say Thursday or Friday. Like, I would feel like you'd be tortured by that.
I am tortured by that. I am definitely tortured by that. And I'm hoping that Tommy Lloyd doesn't lose two games in a row for the first time in his career. So we'll see on Thursday. But yeah, I am tortured by that. I'm also tortured by the Final Four. As an Arizona fan, it's kind of both sides of it right now because we can't break through. Anyway,
what do you think about this year's tournament, the men's tournament?
I think it's going to be really exciting. Last year would be hard to top. I mean, what we saw last year was just incredible, seeing so many upsets in those first 2 days. But I think there's a lot of interesting, compelling storylines and. I hope to see Purdue do a little bit better. I mean, they've been the team to beat the last two seasons, midseason, and to see them go a little bit deeper and to see what Edie does. I'd like to see him play next to Wimby.
But yet, this is probably the if I'm wrong, the first time that the most compelling storyline, not even just line, but plural lines on women's college football. I mean, you go with Caitlin, you go with Staley and South Carolina, Juju Watkins, LSU and everything. I mean, that's, knowing that you can't really explain a phenomenon, explain Caitlin Clark.
Oh gosh, that's a hard question. She just has something special that I don't think we will ever see again. She's got the skills, the talent, just enough swagger, the basketball intellect. She's also a really good teammate. And I think that's overlooked a lot in the conversation around Caitlin Clark this year and breaking the scoring titles. But I mean, she broke the Big Ten assist record. I mean, she's a great teammate. She's got great vision on the court. She just understands the game. And I think how she carries herself off the court has also been amazing to watch for a young person to be under the spotlight as she has been. And everyone's talking about her. She's making good money at this point. She's getting invites and tweets from LeBron and all kinds. It's just the way she's composed herself while continuing to play at the level she's played. I mean, ice in her veins is just amazing. I don't think we'll ever see anything like her.
I like that she likes the moment.
She likes the moment. Yeah. I mean, incredible. Big time. Yeah. Just steps up big time. But you said it before we started. Like, we never thought we'd see a Cheryl Miller again.
Yeah.
Or a Cheryl Swoops. Or
right. Yeah. Sue Bird.
A Sue Bird. Yeah. Dinah Taurasi.
Yeah.
Maya Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here we are. And that's what's elevated the game. The talent's only going to get better.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, so there was a time I felt like with women's college basketball, it was like UConn and Stanford. And everyone else. And so now
Tennessee.
That's right. Yeah.
Same on me.
Shame on me. Well, West Coast bias. But yeah, it was UConn, Tennessee, Stanford on the West Coast. And that was kind of it. But it's diversified so much, right? So, I mean,
it's been a great thing for the game. It really has been. I know the NCAA has made some changes along the way to help that. But I think it's just also happened organically by just having more talent across the country. Yeah. It's not just this small group of athletes that are going straight to UConn, straight to Tennessee, or straight to South Carolina. There's just better athletes.
Yeah, I think for some of the negatives around youth sports, obviously men's AAU basketball gets that's a pretty rough environment. So it was 7-on-7, but I think that on the women's side, the fact that there is an equality in volleyball, softball, basketball. I think you're really seeing the result of that type of opportunity for young women to play in junior high and high school at really elite levels. It's really now paying off in college basketball. And they're staying for 4 years as well. I mean, I one of the elements of NIL and the men's game is that I think it is going to dramatically improve the quality of play on the court, because you're going to get more juniors and seniors that are staying and less guys that are taking the chance on the NBA. How do you think NIL is impacting both women's and men's college basketball?
I think coupled with the transfer portal, we are living in some interesting times, and where it goes from here, I don't know. I wish that years ago when the lawsuit, first started being talked about, I wish the NCAA would have gotten out in front of it. Mm-hmm. Do I think these players deserve to reap the benefits of what they are doing for the universities and their coaches and their conferences? Absolutely. Do I think it should have been done in a more responsible way? Yes. What that would have looked like and how they reel it back in, I don't know. I do agree with you, Mark, that we're going to see more talent stay, and that hurts. There's a trickle-down effect, and there's layers to that that hurts some of our high school seniors that don't have an opportunity to go straight into college because those scholarships are already taken up by transfers, right? You don't see it as much on the women's side. You see it a little bit, but these players are hopping around like crazy in all sports, not just basketball and football. Those are the main two on the men's side, but I don't know what the future holds, to be honest.
Well, do you wish that NIL existed when you were playing?
I don't know that would have mattered.
Right, I understand.
I may have had a deal with the car wash across the street.
Right. But
like Earl Abel's back in the day when it was across the street.
Yeah. I appreciate that point. But like just in general,
Yeah. Or some form or fashion of it, that there would have been something established for collegiate players to have something beyond graduating.
What about the transfer portal, though? Because I see that as, like, I mean, you played at Incarnate Word for 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. So, but now it's like, the fans are loyal to the institution or the team. Players come and go.
I am more a fan of some type of NIL version than I am of the transfer portal. I know that it was created for a good reason because of the pandemic, but we're well past that. And what I don't like to see is it's giving these players an easy out. Mm-hmm. And they're missing out on that chance to be loyal to a team, to be loyal to a coach. Oh, this coach yelled at me wrong in practice one day. I'm out of here. And you see that over and over. I mean, what kind of lesson is that for our young people? When they're going to get out into the real world and, I don't like this job. Mark looked at me wrong this morning. I'm out of here.
Yeah,
he made fun of my basketball team.
Yeah,
I'm gone.
I'm done.
I think it sets a bad precedent for the future of collegiate athletics.
Character.
Character, yeah. They're missing out on some of those lessons.
Were there times when you thought about transferring, or I mean,
never. But there were times when I thought, I'm not sure I can play for this coach. She was tough, and she was very different from what I had experienced growing up. And I was coming into a different environment where I wasn't the leading scorer, and I had to sit the bench for 2 years and got yelled at like I'd never been yelled at before. But never once did I think, I'm going to transfer. And I stuck it out, and I had lunch with her last week. She was in town. I keep in touch with her. She's one of the greatest influences of my life.
Did you explore playing professionally at all after college?
I thought about it. I had a couple of friends from our conference that went overseas and found an opportunity. And I look back and think, gosh, should I have done that? Could I have done that? I think it would have been incredible. But San Antonio Sports came calling, and I had an opportunity to join the team to work on the 2002 Women's Final Four, and that I would not change for anything. You take a college basketball player and throw her into a chance to run the greatest women's basketball tournament. It was unbelievable.
So is this your 22nd year at San Antonio?
My 24th.
24th year.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about, I'd love for you to like, first of all, congratulations on everything.
Oh, thank you.
You're an incredible ambassador for this city, for not just just for sports, for women, for youth sports.
For life.
For life. No, it's really, really incredible. Like, talk about your journey at San Antonio Sports. What drew you to it? What keeps you in it? Like,
Well, I majored in sports management, as Carrie mentioned. We were one of the first sports management programs in the country, Incarnate Word, if you can believe that, back in the 90s. That was such a new program. And I knew I wanted to stay in sports, but I knew I did not want to coach. And so I came across this and said, well, let's give this a try. And our—
Well, let's pause there, right? This is about stories. Go ahead, Carrie.
I was gonna ask about why not coaching?
I've got a great answer for that. I was a really intense athlete. And whether we had a huge win or a devastating loss, I was the athlete that couldn't sleep for a week. And I would replay every moment. And I just knew, had I gone into coaching, I would have been twice as bad. No life.
It's great self-awareness.
Yeah, yeah. And I knew it wasn't for me. So went down this other path. And our department head, who was my main professor, was really tied into San Antonio Sports. He was really good friends through the modern pentathlon era here in San Antonio. And so he got me the internship. I started in 1999, and my first project was working on that Pan Am Games bid. And then after I graduated, there was not an opportunity for me. So I found the first job I could find. That was at, you might remember this, Just for Feet. The athletic shoe story.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you been in San Antonio long enough?
No, but we had those in Tucson.
So I went to an athletic shoe store and quickly rose to management position. level.
2 weeks.
It's like a demotion when you get promoted,
right?
It was
all high school kids working. Retail was the worst for me. So I spent 5 months doing that. And on every off day that I had, I just was trying to pay my apartment rent. I'd show back up at San Antonio Sports and just volunteer. And right about that time, in the spring of 2000, San Antonio Sports was hiring for our women's Final Four staff. And I just kept knocking on this woman's door saying, college basketball player, business degree, I want to be a part of this team.
Awesome.
And she finally realized I was not going anywhere. So offered me a job, and that was my first project to start on. The 2002 Women's Final Four, which UConn won off of an undefeated season. Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird era. We still hold the all-time attendance record for women's basketball. Not the record that was broke this year, which was an exhibition game, but for let the record stand, 29,619 for that women's Final Four.
Mm. Awesome.
And I'll never forget that championship night.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, from there, I kind of stayed on my path for NCAA championships. And fortunately, we were stacked. We were going to men's Final Four in 2004. And we were awarded another back-to-back, 08 men's, 10 women's, two volleyball championships in between and behind. And so just always had good job security. And after our last one, I was able to stay on and work on some other projects, see some different areas of the organization, learn some new skills. And then we were never thought it would happen, but we were awarded another men's Final Four after losing out in that one cycle. So 2018 came around for our fourth, and was able to run that for our organizing committee, and here I am.
I've never thought about this until just hearing you, you know, tick off the Final Fours, and, mm-hmm. and but also thinking about the Spurs. You know, that's running concurrent with the, you know, as you said, the Spurs teams that we really remember and miss. Could you make a case that 2000 to 2018, maybe still now with another one coming up, that this is like, has been a golden age of sports in San Antonio?
That's a great way to put it. Yes, is the answer to that. And to be able to be a part of that and to be a fan and then to be a part of it on the NCAA side. Yeah, it was a very special time. I have friends that have kids that are in their 20s that never knew a losing season until recently. They just didn't grow up ever watching the Spurs lose. I remember where I watched the 1998 final game that was played in New York. I remember who I was watching it with and where
same,
I was.
Yeah, same, yeah.
And every championship after that.
What do you think makes San Antonio such an attractive draw nationally for the type of events that San Antonio sports is able to draw here? And how do you sustain it? How do you keep going after it?
Well, and that's the story we like to tell. I think first and foremost, this is a destination city that people want to come to. It's a beautiful city. We have things to offer outside of just going to the games. We have an amazing climate in April. We've got the centrally located city in the country, so easy to get to from wherever you're coming from. Of course, the downtown footprint, the walkability between all of our facilities, our friendly faces, our volunteers, just our hospitality community. This is what we do day in and day out in San Antonio in terms of tourism and hospitality. So we just have this perfect package that we can roll out the red carpet for the fans, for the coaches, for the players, the teams. And they love it. And we hear it everywhere we go. Gosh, this thing should be in San Antonio every year, or every other year. It should go between Indy and San Antonio.
That's awesome. Talk about some of the economic impact. What are the figures in terms of kind of the economic impact that San Antonio sports drives for the city?
We have surpassed $1 billion of overall economic impact over the course of our 40 years. But interestingly enough, the majority of those dollars have come in the last decade, 15 years or so. So it'll be, Josh asked me earlier, what do you see at year 50? And I think you'll see that number double in the next 10 years. To give you an example, Final Four alone next year will probably bring about $250 million of visitor spending.
Wow.
And the trickle down effect of that and what that leave behind for the city is, it's immeasurable. You know, not only just the tax dollars, but the media exposure. As basketball fans around this table, when the season tips right in November and all those classic tournaments all over, it's the road to Phoenix. And in November, it'll be the road to San Antonio. And they'll talk about us for a full year. And then you get into March and they talk about San Antonio all day and all the sports shows, and you cannot put a dollar figure on that. It's a commercial.
So how do you balance that, right? Because, you know, the city has other issues, right? It definitely has some poverty issues that for a large city that we have to deal with. But how do you balance kind of like the importance of sports and maintaining the momentum that San Antonio sports creates and the economic impact that has on the city and then the whole region and therefore everybody?
Yeah, it's a hard thing to celebrate the sexiness of a Final Four when we do know what our poverty level is. But there's so many things that these big events bring to the community, not only just the tax dollars that I just referenced that are spread throughout the city in other ways, but we always do youth events, community projects and programs. The NCAA comes in with their own give back. So when the NCAA leaves here next year after the trophy is crowned, there will be a new park that has been built. There will be 65,000 kids touched through a third grade reading program. Mm. We'll have given out 3,000 basketballs to kids in a dribble event. Mm. So there's a lot of things that these events give back to the community, and that's just a Final Four. That's not what, you know, we do so much more in San Antonio day in and day out. But I'll give you one more story of my own talking about giving out 3,000 basketballs. One of those basketball camps I grew up going to that our varsity coach would put on, and I was one of the only girls there. I get to the end of one of those camps, and I'm probably six at the time. And he'd saw me hustle all week and really just get in there with the boys and do everything that he asked of me. And Friday afternoon, waiting on my mom to come pick me up, he comes over and he hands me a brand new indoor authentic leather basketball, which I had never had. I mean, I was already shooting on the driveway with the big rubber ball that was men's size that I could barely handle. And that was one of the greatest gifts ever given to me. And I shot with that ball every day after school, every day during the summer. And the day I signed with Incarnate Word, I had that ball with me.
You still have it?
I kept it until about age 30. I used to take it to speaking engagements and when I'd go talk to kids, just to share, like it starts with a dream, right? And that's why I get excited about giving out 3,000 balls. And there might be one kid, or there might be 10, that receive a ball and they take it home and practice with it and realize that there's a pathway through a sport.
What barriers do you think still exist for women in sports?
Well, I think, you mean at a larger professional level or just overall?
You from your daughters to professional, where just you know, I mean, like we've talked about Caitlin Clark, right? Mm-hmm. And we talked about the parity and college athletics and NIL money and more opportunities that exist professionally. And greater attention. But what are we not talking about? What's out there that, you know, that you think still needs to be addressed? Or
I don't think there's a lot at this point at the youth level. I think that playing field has been leveled. I think the opportunities are equal for what a boy can find to go do versus a girl, or girls can go play in the boys' league. I think the opportunities, the equipment, I think all of that has really been leveled. I think where we're still seeing the disparities at the professional level. And we've all watched that with U.S. Women's National Soccer Team. Mm-hmm. Basketball has made great strides, but the WNBA is still the underdog. But I like to think about it in terms of, you think about how long the NBA and the ABA have been around. Well, how long has the WNBA been around? Look how far we've come in such a short time compared to how long men's sports have been around. Give us 50 more years and let's see where women stand.
I wish we still had a WNBA team.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
This is one of the worst days of my life. It was awful. I love going. I was one of the first season ticket holder deposits that went in. In fact, we were a part of a coalition that helped bring the team here from Utah, San Antonio Sports was. And so I had my deposit in first and I went to every game. And that was such a great family experience. It was affordable. And then our team got really good. Mm. And when Becky was here and we came so close to winning a title, and then.
Well, and think about now, you know, I went to the University of Washington. I am still a huge Kelsey Plum fan, but she really struggled out of the gates.
She did.
Right? But think about Kelsey Plum in this town now.
My gosh.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She'd be a rock star.
She'd be a rock star. Yeah. Right. I wonder, you know, I think about Caitlin Clark and Kelsey Plum to me is like the closest like modern day comp. I wonder how she'll integrate into the league from a skill set perspective, because it took Plum 2 years at least to really find her footing.
I don't think Caitlin's going to have as much struggles. I really don't. And I think she's going to elevate the league just as she's done for women's sports as a whole, but for NCAA basketball.
You think she has the... Excuse me.
I'm having the same podcast. Yeah.
Cut that out. No, just kidding. I don't care. People got to clear their throats.
That's South Texas pollen.
Hey, right. So could she be the greatest of all time, you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
I'm with.
Yeah. I mean, I think she's stamped that at least individually in college. I mean, I think you've got to, kind of goes back to the conversation about Michael Jordan. Yeah. You got to look at the overall picture and championships, and she hasn't won one yet. And I've got her in my bracket this year, but individually, I think, yes, she is. Now when she finishes her career and hangs up the shoes, I think she has the ability to.
I want to touch on one topic that we haven't covered that the Express News is involved in a little bit, that it's been just an incredible experience for me, and that's the San Antonio Sports Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. You guys just knock it out of the knock it out of the park. You know, I think people forget that this is the seventh largest city in the United States. The amount of high school athletes and college athletes and professional athletes that this city creates is just spectacular. And we get to honor them all once a year. Can you just talk about kind of like the impact that the Sports Hall of Fame has had?
Yeah. And in Mark, being a part of that process and being a partner in the event and in the process, I think one of the things that you've seen that I love so much is all of my counterparts in other cities have similar Hall of Fames and galas, but they live in cities with either one or more professional franchises. So it's easy for them to pick off names and have a really glamorous event and sell a ton of tables and make a ton of money. What I love about ours are the stories of names that maybe you've never heard. I'll go back to Sporty Harvey in your column that came out this week. And who would have ever known that story? And he should be in the Hall of Fame. The class that we're inducting this year, Julius Whittier, the first scholarship black football player at the University of Texas.
It's awesome.
I mean, he's in their Ring of Honor, and the career he went on to have beyond sports and the mark he had in the legal profession.
Yeah.
High school coaches, high school athletes. That's what I love about our Hall of Fame, because we're able to celebrate and showcase and highlight stories that people would never hear about because they're not always big names.
I love the Sports Hall of Fame. I love looking at the names of the inductees, of the nominees. Something I've wondered about, though, sometimes when I look at some of the nominees, as time goes on, people forget about, say, the old coaches or even some of the high school athletes. I was wondering if somewhere down the line there could be a component at the Sports Hall of Fame, kind of like what Major League Baseball does, where you have this veterans committee that looks at athletes or contributors who may have been just ignored because time has passed. But I like Sporty Harvey, but I'm also thinking of like coaches or maybe just great athletes from the 50s who people thought about. And you have the regular four or five inductees, but then you can also have like this group of three or four.
I think that's a great idea. We may need to add him to our selection. Yeah. And that's a category of ours, but you're right. That's one that can get pushed down to the bottom of the list as years go by. And those are stories that need to be told.
As someone who's part of that process, it's so hard.
Yeah, it is so hard. And I've only gone through it twice now.
it is agonizing. It gives you a very distant but similar look, I have to imagine, in terms of what some of the sports writers deal with the professional Hall of Fames, because there are a number of people that are worthy on a year in and year out basis, and the process is actually, I've been here for 5 years now. It's probably the favorite thing that I do. Because it gives me the most insight to the history of the city.
Yeah.
And it's been a real incredible opportunity to learn more about the sports culture of San Antonio, being a part of that, because you get to read all these bios. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Well, and for the audience listening, just to clarify, we start with a public nomination process during the summer, and then we've got a voting committee.
Yep.
So it doesn't come down to a small selection committee that's making the choices. No. We take the votes by category, we go through them. There's factors that go into it. So it's not just a handful of people picking who we want. So I just want to make sure that
people should also know that you know, it's not about the number of times you nominate somebody. Once somebody is nominated, unless things have changed just once, they're on the list for a certain amount.
For certain amount of years, yeah.
So it's not like if we 50 people, let's go nominate Mark for the Sports Hall of Fame.
Right.
No, if someone's already done it, he's there for
the
while.
And I just wanted to clarify that there's integrity to the process.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's great what y'all do.
When is the event?
May 9th, Thursday, May 9th. Incredible class. So join us, sanantoniosports.org at the 2024 San Antonio Sports Hall of Fame presented by HEB.
And who is in the class, Jenny?
We have Andrea Williams, who was a standout at A&M, Churchill, two-sport athlete, basketball and volleyball. I think the first two-sport athlete at A&M. But more importantly, the career she had after college athletics has been something to watch. So somebody I look up to in the sports industry, she's now the chief impact officer at the Utah Jazz. But before that was the number two, the college football playoff.
She tried to take Jenny's job at the, on the, when literally she got up at the, whatever the pulpit to say how grateful she is. She was so magical. Yeah. Jenny got up there. She's like, oh God, my job.
And then her roommate in college at A&M, and we learned the day of the press conference, is track star Anjanette Kirkland.
Oh, yeah.
She went to, gosh, help me out, Mark. What high school did she go to?
I'm not going
to
remember.
Oh, Holmes? I think Holmes. Gosh, I hope I don't butcher
Husky,
that.
Holmes Husky.
Yeah,
Holmes.
Yeah. And then Julius Whittier that I already mentioned. And of course, the great Coach Rackley, Judson, state championship coach.
It was great to have the whole Judson crew there for his, and he was.
And that was just the announcement. I can't wait to see.
Rackley was like trailer before trailer. And just in terms of his
personality, that's a great analogy.
And enthusiasm.
Yeah. That's a great analogy. Yeah,
great high school football coaches. You can. Yeah. Their presence is immediately recognizable, and it was incredible to meet him. You could just feel the impact that he must have had on thousands of kids over the course of his career. And you can't fake the admiration from the Judson community that they have from him, for him. Like it's going to be electric.
There's going to be a lot of red in the audience that night.
Yeah, so it's going to be an amazing night. So, little anniversary for San Antonio sports, right?
Just a little one, yeah.
So, you've been there for 24 years, but it's been in existence for
40 years. We rolled out our campaign in January. We're going to be celebrating all year round with a number of activities, including my first stab at hosting a podcast called Game On, which we do right here from the studio. Thank you, Express News.
You're welcome.
Limited series. Those will start coming out soon. So, I'm sure dozens of people will tune in to hear us talk about the history of San Antonio sports, but also some really key figures in our sports industry here in San Antonio.
And do you know, just off the top of your head, 40 years, do you know how many people you've touched?
If you take the big events out of that question, through the years, I mean, I would say well over millions. And we used to do a program that was in every school district that we would impact 150,000 kids a year in an exercise program. And we got into a program in conjunction with the Rock and Roll Marathon called Kids Rock. Yeah. And then our current program, I Play After School, we did a swimming program. And then our community fitness program, millions.
So from a community involvement perspective, how do people get involved in San Antonio sports? How do they support you?
Well, any given year, not just our 40th, we would love for more people to come out, participate in our events, volunteer. We cannot do what we do without thousands of volunteers that support and execute our events. And then we are a 501c3 nonprofit. So donations help us do what we do and be able to bring these free community programs to San Antonio. So in year 40, as we celebrate and try to achieve this fundraising goal, we're asking everybody to give a little bit more. And we've got a 40 for 40 campaign. So whether that's $4 or $40 or $4,000, whatever you can give, know that that impact goes a long way. And we touch so many areas of San Antonio that a lot of our citizens probably don't even realize, from facilities to programs to events to maybe you've been to a regional basketball game before at the Frost Bank Center. That was us.
Yeah. You're a trailblazer, Jenny Korn.
Yeah.
Trailblazer.
That's great.
Thank you, guys. This was fun.
Thank you. Yeah, it's awesome to have you.